going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in this afternoon, and I am thrilled to welcome Curtis Houck to the airwaves here today. He's the managing editor of Newsbusters with the Media Research Center. Hey, Curtis, thanks for joining us this afternoon here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
Hey, I wanted to reach out to you because we had what I thought was kind of a stunning admission, but then on the other hand, it shouldn't have been stunning, and that is that an Axios reporter at the White House Correspondents' Dinner actually calls out the media for its coverage of Biden's cognitive decline. Tell us about it. What happened?
Yeah, so this was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, perhaps the most self-righteous event known to man. The White House Correspondents' Dinner, it's an entire weekend where journalists celebrate themselves,
wow,
which is really interesting because that's something that they do every single day to anyone who will listen and with themselves. The most insufferable group of people, D.C. journalists, even more so than politicians. Alex Thompson at the dinner, along with the scholarships, which is what they claim is the real reason for having the dinner, they give out some awards for coverage by White House reporters for various things over the previous year. And Thompson received one for his reporting in Axios about Joe Biden's cognitive decline. Oh, my gosh. Amazing. You know, isn't that interesting? Now that Joe Biden is not president, we can now give awards to people for the few that actually did write about Joe Biden. And he actually had something interesting to say. Like, you know, I can read a small quote here. "We bear some responsibility for faith in the media being at such lows. I say this because acknowledging errors builds trust, and being defensive about them further erodes it. We should have done better." Well, thank you, Captain Obvious, number one. Number two, I say he did have stories that people weren't talking about enough. You know, he did have these stories. He was perhaps the most consistent single individual reporter in the mainstream media doing stories about Biden, not really being with the program. But as Red Steez on Twitter notes, he too, earlier in Biden's presidency, not just the last year, went along with a lot of these narratives. He is a stutter. Oh, he's just being jovial, you know, with his inability to recall people's names. That kind of thing, saying it's Republican attacks. So you could look at this one of two ways. You could be generous and say he did the right thing. You know, it's the first step towards rebuilding trust by saying you have a problem. But also you could say it's lip service because Biden's not president anymore.
But which is more astounding from your perspective, Curtis, that the media acknowledged that they didn't do a good job of covering Biden, or that someone got an award for saying that?
Well, I think it's the former, because I think it is interesting that he specifically said not just that we should have done better, but the part about acknowledging errors builds trust and being defensive about them further erodes it. We need more of this. We need this to be said by everyone, because the reality is, and why it's so frustrating to deal with these people, is they equate valid, generic, run-of-the-mill criticism with, like, death threats or something, like we're somehow against the First Amendment by saying the liberal media are a bunch of creeps, annoying bastards, you know, like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. It's un-American. No, we're simply saying that you guys are not doing a good job.
Correct.
And I think this is the way to go about it. But it also, you also then have to have a track record about doing better next time. You can't just say, oh, we messed up this time.
Correct. Yeah, it's not just an admission of past problems, but it should also be a template for how we'll not make the same mistakes next time. And I want to ask you this on the same topic, because NBC, or should I say former NBC correspondent and host of Meet the Press, Chuck Todd, he basically said the same thing recently when he was asked about it. And his answer was this. And he said what everyone knows but didn't say out loud. He said that our fear as journalists, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said our fear as journalists was that if we pointed out problems with Biden, that it might actually help Trump, and we all hate Trump. But isn't that at the core of missing the whole purpose of journalism to begin with?
Right, to report the facts without fear or favor. I mean, I think this is an issue that we have in all forms of media, liberal media, corporate media, yes, even a lot of conservative media. We only tell people things that they want to hear, and the facts have to win the day. That's just how this goes. People just want to stay in their nice little comfort zones. But when the legacy liberal media, all of these network behemoths are the ones that supposedly are supposed to control the messaging and whom we are supposed to put our trust in, they have made a decision to go in one direction. And
yes,
it's going to take a lot more than just one guy standing up from Axios, a much newer outlet with shorter, easier to read stories, admittedly, to say we need to do better. We can't just blame it on voters being stupid and falling for disinformation,
yes,
which is what has been their normal strategy
really
the last
has. It really has.
Decade.
We're talking to Curtis Houck. He's the managing editor of Newsbusters, which, of course, is with the Media Research Center. And Curtis, for years now, we've been told by the mainstream media that Joe Biden was basically doing backflips and gymnastics while calculating the trajectory of satellites on their orbit around the Earth, and he's doing it in his sleep. Is there any tie-in between that and the fact that right now the media, the mainstream media, has historic lows when it comes to both trust and people watching and consuming the mainstream media?
Well, I think it was definitely there before. You know, like there are people out there that say, oh, NPR and PBS used to be so trustworthy, and 30 years ago, 60 Minutes was the bee's knees. No, I mean, I think they've always been biased. The Media Research Center was created in 1987, and some of the quotes that they had then, well before I was alive or thought of, oh no, my parents were probably thinking of me by that point.
Well, they were thinking of something, but it may not have been you, but go ahead.
Yeah, not have been me yet. You know, it showed that there was all kinds of nasty things out there. But I think something as vivid as Joe Biden, you know, Joe Biden falling apart before our very eyes, that is something that I think people take great offense to. Like, you're really insulting our intelligence at this point, because at the very least, the things that happened with Bill Clinton were behind closed doors. I mean, not that we didn't think they were true, but we didn't like physically see them with our own eyes. Whereas the things happening with Joe Biden, we actually see him calling out to a dead congresswoman, him shaking hands with the air, those kinds of things.
Yes.
Falling down.
Yeah, and
you know,
we could see those things. You're right. We could see those things. And then when we hear the media telling us that what we're seeing is not true, there's no wonder that there's no trust in the mainstream media today. Curtis Houck, managing editor of Newsbusters with the Media Research Center, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon right here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Always a pleasure. You guys are one of the best. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Great to talk to you. And it's also great to talk to our very own Annie Fry, who's in Washington, D.C. right now. And we're going to talk to her right after this.
Annie Goes to Washington is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage. Same or better rates, no closing costs, fast closing. And by Grasser Electric. Don't be left in the dark. Call Grasser Electric.
Hey, Annie, great to talk to you. What? Tell us, literally right now, where are you? Let us live vicariously through you.
Okay, I'm gonna paint a little picture for you right now. I am sitting on a black park bench. My feet are on a beautifully paved brick path that flows through Lafayette Park, that's just north of the White House. And for people who may remember, if you haven't been to Washington, D.C., I've been a few times now in the last year, but I still consider myself very much a newbie. So, like, I see things, and I'm like, I remember when that was on the news or whatever it might be. Lafayette Park was the park that President Trump walked through when the BLM riots were going crazy and they were attacking the church right here on the corner. I'm looking directly at this little church on the corner. Lafayette Park is teeming with people. It's a beautiful day.
Is that also the park where Vince Foster was found with the gun in the wrong hand and he allegedly committed suicide?
That sounds specific, and I have no idea.
That was during the Clinton administration.
Yeah, you're going to have to get one of your producers to Google that. And
okay.
It's too late to make me look good. So
I'm going by memory here, but I think it's the same park. But I'm sorry to interrupt. So tell us, though, why are you there? Why is Annie gone to Washington?
Well, first and foremost, a gigantic thank you to Stewie from Stewart's American Mortgage and to Grasser Electric for making this possible for us to make this trip and to help us really get the word out about this trip. So people can kind of live vicariously through my eyes, through my experiences. It really, you know, I don't know if I am here because it was my birthday, if that's too simple to say, but Brad Range, my producer, for my birthday, he had been working on this as an opportunity to get me to sit in with the White House press pool, and it kind of came together right around my birthday. So, and then after we got the approval for me to be able to participate in the White House press pool, they said, hey, my birthday was the 18th, so that's the week that I found out that this was going on. So that's like, what, a week ago or two? And then they're like, oh, and by the way, the end of April is the 100 days recognition of the administration. It'd be great if you came out. There'd be a ton of opportunity. And so we turned it around super fast. And now I'm sitting here in Lafayette Park, where that thing you just said happened, maybe.
Well, that was during the Clinton administration, but we're going way back. But my point is for today, though, what did you actually see today there at the White House?
So I made my way to the press entrance at the White House this morning. I was in line to get in at about 6:55 a.m. Eastern time after an 11:35 p.m. Eastern time landing last night, getting in late last night. And I was able to attend the press briefing that they had. Traditionally, those press briefings happen late morning, afternoon, but because of the 100 days recognition, they're holding them probably in the mornings throughout the course of this week. I know tomorrow is going to be the same, and I will be in the press room once again tomorrow. And this morning, they focused on border security and immigration reform. So Carolyn Leavitt began the briefing at 8:30 a.m. That would have been Eastern time, so 7:30 at home. And next to her up there at the podium was Tom Homan. And just to hear Tom Homan give such a focused and clear and concise goal that they have with this administration, I mean, he knows exactly what he's doing. He has no doubts about the fact that what he is doing is right for this country, is right for the people on both sides of the border. So I was able to be in the press briefing room for that. And then this afternoon, I was able to go and attend the Eagles Super Bowl championship recognition and celebration on the other side of the White House, which was really amazing. I got to see the Rose Garden, the outside of the Oval Office as I was walking to outside of the White House. And I'm just sitting here. I'm basically going where they tell me I can go and talking to people in the press room and just learning about how this whole thing works that we consume every day, multiple times a day. Getting to see it from this angle is really eye-opening and really, really cool.
Well, Mark Cox just texted me, by the way, Annie, and let me know that Foster did not commit suicide himself. Obviously, I knew that. That's why I made the line about Vince Foster had the gun in his wrong hand, but that was in Fort Marcy Park. So my apologies.
That makes sense. I remember.
I got my parks messed up from the Clinton administration. So thank you, Mark Cox, for correcting me. I will tell you, though, that Ethan had a great question, and Ethan was talking to us during the break, and he said, you know, if I were there, I would just think, wow, what am I doing here? And did that thought ever come to you today during the course of all of the events that you've been witnessing?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I'm trying to make that not my only thought while I'm here. Ethan's exactly right. I mean, you know, I was actually having a great conversation with Mark Meredith, who's with Fox News. He does a lot of hits with us on the station, and he does a lot of TV, of course. But he was so kind and so explanatory, because these are all professional people here. They're here doing their jobs. There's not a lot of time to like babysit a newbie who's getting this opportunity. And I'm appreciative of that, because if it seemed like you could bring people in, but you had to hold their hands, they wouldn't bring people in because they don't have time to do that. So it's really amazing to be able to be here and take it all in. And all of this stuff is happening around me. And I was saying on our show earlier today that my job today, I was focusing on learning as much as I could and trying to soak it in and understand, okay, when people go through that door, what's on the other side of that door? Because have you ever been to the White House?
I have. I've been through in the White House on a tour once, and to me it was breathtaking, but it was limited. And you were in places that normal people like me don't get to go.
Well, and, you know, the other thing, too, is that in our minds it's kind of an endless place, you know? Like, it's always teeming with people and business and just, you know, these really massive things. But at the same time, it's physically, while it is certainly a mansion, the West Wing part of the White House isn't really that big. And you go in the press briefing room and you're like, this isn't nearly as big as I thought it was. And I have the possibility to, another one of those Ethan moments, what am I doing here, to go into the Oval Office if they sign executive orders. Tomorrow, I might get the opportunity to do that. And I had multiple people who I just kind of struck up conversations with. They'll be like, it's a lot smaller than you think. It looks bigger on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it's magnificent. The history, like, that's the thing that strikes me the most when I'm in there and I understand the gravity of the things that have taken place in those walls and I'm standing there. So I would actually kind of hope that everybody who walks into the White House for the first time would go, what am I doing here? You know?
Hi, Annie. This is your producer, Ethan Hannaford.
Hi, Ethan.
So earlier I asked you a sports question regarding if you were going to be able to sneak off to a Nationals game. It was 95% a joke. So I'm going to go ahead and stick with that theme. Philadelphia Eagles. Did you get like close to any of these massive professional football players? And what was that like getting to? I mean, that's such a unique thing to be a part of, a president recognizing a Super Bowl champion team. So what was that like?
I really think it's interesting that you asked that question, because when I was there, listen, I have no affinity whatsoever, complete and total indifference to the Philadelphia Eagles. Don't hate them, don't love them, don't personally, you know, this wasn't a celebration for me. But it was really kind of cool to see these people who were gathered, you know, the people, not the press people, but I don't know how many people were there, maybe a couple hundred or whatever, but they're family members, they're, you know, people who work in these staff. There's so much that, you know, we all know that a professional athletic, you know, a professional team in the NFL or the MLB or NBA or whatever, there's a lot of people working to support a championship team that are in the background that don't get recognized. And a lot of those people were there on the White House lawn today. And it's Philly now. So it kind of occurred to me that I'm standing here with all these Philly fans. And, you know, as soon as they make the announcement that they're going to come out, they start cheering and spelling Eagles correctly, I might add. but then it was so funny being Philadelphia, and I've been to a Phillies game before, and I've experienced that you know, fandom or whatever, at least in Philadelphia, they had all the players lined up, like getting ready for the president to come out and everything. And then there was, I don't know, it might have been like 5 to 7 minutes, it seemed like, of just standing there, like, okay, it's a photo op, whatever. But several of the Philadelphia fans in the White House lawn are like, what are we waiting for? And I was like, oh, that's perfect. Like, that makes total sense.
Very, very fitting of the Philadelphia fan, the personalities of, that's super cool.
So, so Annie, just as we wrap this up, we've got to go to a commercial break here, but you'll be there tomorrow as well, right?
Correct. I have a press pass for the whole day tomorrow. And then, as I understand it, Ethan, I'm going to fly back early Wednesday, and you're going to pick me up from the airport, and then we're going to host the show Wednesday.
That's the plan.
That
in
is
studio.
The plan. So thanks so much for joining us here on the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in. Annie, great as always to talk to you.
And I want to, if I can scooch into here just real quick, again, one more time, thank you so much to Stewart's American Mortgage and Grasser Electric for making this possible. It's been great to have them sponsor the show, sponsor this trip, and I just want to make sure we understand how much we appreciate them.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate them. And then when you get home, Google Vince Foster and find out why he did not commit suicide.
You're going to have to text me those names.
It'll be an eye-opening experience, Annie. Great to talk to you as always.
Take care.
Hey, when we come back from this break, we're going to talk to Joe Warmington. Right now, Canada is electing their next prime minister. How will the spat with U.S. over the trade tariffs, how will that impact the Canadian election? Next, right here on 97.1 FM.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in this afternoon. Thanks for joining us. And you probably know, but right now there's an election in Canada to determine the next prime minister. And that's why I wanted to reach out to Joe Warmington. He's a Toronto Sun columnist. And I want to get the scoop on the election right from somebody who knows. Joe, welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
Good to be with you, Brad. Yeah, it's, we're maybe 3 hours from the polls actually closing. I'm working on it right now, working on my column for the Toronto Sun. I'm going to be heading out to one of the places where they count the votes and all that stuff. So it's going to be really interesting. It's not quite like as exciting as the American national election, but it's as close as you get to that. And it has been really intense here. And there's a lot on the line. And, of course, the president, your president, is in the middle of the whole thing. So,
yes, he is.
And
I'm going to ask you about that in a second, Joe. But just to kind of set the table, as it were, right now, the current prime minister, Mark Carney, he stepped in when Pierre Trudeau stepped down. He's with the Liberal Party.
Justin Trudeau.
Justin Trudeau. Yeah. I'm sorry. Pierre was his dad. Yeah. And I'm dating myself here with Pierre.
No problem. I thought I might as well get it. We might as well
thank
get
you.
That right.
Okay. Yeah, we got to get to Justin. And I won't even get into the conspiracy theories about the Cuban president. But they'll save that for another day.
Mark has asked you about that before.
But on the conservative side, I think it's Pierre Poilievre is also on the ballot, so to speak. But tell us, for folks who don't understand how Canadian politics work, how does the Canadian election differ from the U.S. election?
Well, they don't have the set dates, and they don't have, it's a parliamentary system like the British system. So they, basically they have 300 plus seats. I think it's, can't remember the exact number now. Sometimes it changes, but so whoever has the most seats forms the government. and you've got different parties that get seats. I mean, the two big parties are obviously the conservatives, which would be like your Republicans, and the liberals like your Democrats. And then the NDP are kind of more left. It's a third kind of bigger party, and they're usually third place, although they have formed governments provincially, things like that. And then there's outliers like the People's Party and the Green Party and things like that. They often have no seats or one seat or two seats, things like that. So basically what we have here is you've had a decade of Justin Trudeau's Liberals, and, you know, he tanked in the polls. I mean, just a nightmare for so many Canadians, and everything has just gone to hell. And this guy, Pierre Poilievre, is young. He's like 45 years old, married, you know, two kids, the whole thing, ready to go. Leading the last year and a half in the polls, and then Trudeau just got scared and got out. They forced him out. And they brought this guy, Mark Carney, in, who, you know, is basically the globalist. I mean, there's no one like that. He's been the chair of the Bank of Canada, the chair of the Bank of England. You know, he's the chair of Brookfield, which is one of those big things similar to BlackRock. It's not as big as that, but it's a trillion-dollar asset company, which, you know, is headquartered right in New York City. So that's the guy that sort of inherited he won the party leadership, and he's been the prime minister. He was only there for 9 days, and he called this election. You can call an election. You've got a five-year window to do it. And it's about, you know, it's a minority parliament that's propped up by another party, so that kind of run out. It's a little confusing, I think, for people to follow it, but even for us, it's not easy. You know, it's I kind of like the American system because it's a little more straightforward, and you get those set dates, which I like a lot. Here, you know, you never know when they're going to call it. But anyway, here we are. They're counting the ballots, Brad, right now, and we'll know most likely tonight, unless there's some sort of unusual situation. But, you know, we should know who the new prime minister is, whether it's Carney hangs on to it or whether we get a new leader in Pierre Poilievre.
Well, we're talking to Joe Warmington. He's a Toronto Sun columnist. And Joe, talk to us about trends, because when you look at the U.S. media, the U.S. media, of course, wants to make it all about Trump. But when you look at the trend line in terms of how this election was progressing, from your perspective, did Donald Trump's either the tariff issues or the comments about the 51st state, has that had, from a Canadian's perspective, a significant impact on the direction of the election?
There's no question about it. He's interfered in the election. I mean, it's unbecoming any leader to do what he did to Canada. He has zero respect for the country, zero respect for any of the people who lead the country. And he also is taking Americans on something they didn't vote for him for, which is to, you know, I'm saying quotations, annex the country, become the 51st state. And he says it over and over and over again. And, you know, at first people thought it was kind of cute. They don't now. And as a result, he's going to probably end up, we'll see in a few hours, with the Liberals, you know, holding on to this thing, because nobody wants, everybody's scared of him and they're scared of change. I mean, basically, Canada has, you know, has contributed an awful lot to American success. I mean, of the 20 states that are closer to Canada, Canada's the largest trading partner, and, you know, lots of oil and minerals and everything else go that way. But President Trump has been focused on this trade deficit. But what he's really doing, and I don't blame him for this part, is that he won on the seven states, the swing states, and he wants to bring all those jobs back. And that's why he's doing the tariffs, and that's particularly with Canada, because in Canada we have agreements like Mexico does to build things, and a lot of cars, American cars, go back and forth seven times before they're finished between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So he wants those jobs all to be made down in Michigan and places like that, Cleveland, and, you know, and I understand that. The problem is that, you know, you're going to crater a country and tank it and have a country of 40 million people, which is a good neighbor, loves Americans, and say, you know, we're going to put you out of business. You're not a real country unless it's us. Well, you know, maybe if you're a state, it's very, very insulting. Look, I support President Trump all through it, all three times. But, you know, I think he's gone too far here. And there's nothing I can do really about it as a Canadian. You just have to have your own vote. But look, it looks like he's sort of pushed you know, the Liberals sort of, he sort of pushed Canada and the Liberals and then himself, you know, we'll see. But all the polls indicate that they're going to maintain power. And it'll be quite a political story because they were dead as a doornail. If it wasn't for Trump, they would still be dead. And, you know, they were able to tell Canadians we have to fight against Trump. And, of course, Poilievre leans a little more towards Trump and is sort of known as the Canadian Trump. He couldn't really fight Trump. He put out some words, but they seemed hollow, didn't really mean it. And, you know, they used the rhetoric. So, and Trump has said he wants the Liberal. He wants Carney. So we'll see what happens, but you may regret it, I'll tell you.
Well, as we learn from 2016, Joe, polls cannot always be trusted. And finally, we're going to have to break here for a commercial break. But lastly, you said we're going to know the results tonight. Approximately, I mean, do you have any idea about when tonight we might start getting an idea of how this election's going to turn out?
I would say around 10 o'clock you'll know tonight because it's at 9:30. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I agree with you. The polls, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I've been covering the whole election for the Toronto Sun, written many things about it. And, you know, I'm still kind of thinking that it's possible that we, you know, we sort of equate it to the American election, even the one with Hillary Clinton. Maybe there'll be a surprise. But at the same time, Canada is not the same as the United States. It's, you know, it's very, very, I don't know, it's kind of monolithic in a weird way. I know we have the West, we have the East, we have different things, but it's not like your North, South, East, West. It's a little bit different. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be very, very, it could be very close on many ridings. I mean, I'm writing that as we speak. I hope I explained it well.
You did, Joe.
I just want Americans to know that we love Americans, and you know, I know we'll sort this out at some point. And, you know, obviously President Trump, hopefully he backs off on us at one point.
Well, understood, Joe. Joe Warmington, Toronto Sun columnist. Great to talk to you again right here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Have a good night.
Thank you, Joe. Hey, one of the things I wanted to mention here just to wrap up this segment, and obviously Joe Warmington was coming from a Canadian perspective, but when you look at tariffs, I'm generally a free trade guy. But one of the areas where I believe tariffs are essential is when it comes to auto manufacturing. When he talks about all of these cars that go back and forth across the border, these are vehicles to be sold in the United States. And we have the capacity, the manufacturing capacity, to make more cars here. And so even though that hurts Canada in terms of employment, what's wrong from the U.S. perspective to increasing the employment of auto manufacturers and to make more cars that are then purchased by Americans? I see nothing wrong with that. Now, when you look at toys or textiles or other things like that, you know, sock manufacturing is never coming back to the U.S. ever. It's just never going to happen. You can't make a pair of socks or a toaster in the U.S. because they'd cost $100. But you can bring car manufacturing back. I support tariffs in that area. And the fact that Canadians don't like it, frankly, I'm not all that upset that they don't like it because we're giving them jobs that could easily go to Americans right here in the U.S. And I hope that this tariff concept brings that type of manufacturing back to the United States. Hey, we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this with a cut of the day. Stick around on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young winding up today. The rest of the week will be Mike Elam. And then next week, I'll be sitting in on Monday and Wednesday of next week. So mark your calendars for that. One of the things I wanted to check with Frank Cusimano on, and we just didn't have time, but I wanted to ask him about the passing of Walt Jocketty. And I just remember watching Walt Jocketty when he was here for the Cardinals and how he presented class. He presented an air of knowledge and understanding, really understanding of what Cardinals fans want. And it wasn't that Cardinals fans expect every year that you're going to have the World Series winning team, but that the team, and this is what St. Louis wants and what Walt Jocketty understood, was that St. Louis wants to try to get to the World Series, to put the best team on the field, not just the best team we can put on the field at minimum wage. And so we saw that during the Walt Jocketty years. The fans were at the stadium. And right now, I mean, I've been to, I don't know, five games so far this year, and the fans haven't been there. Ethan, I know you were a lot younger then, but what were your thoughts or memories of Walt Jocketty?
One of the golden ages of Cardinals baseball.
Yes.
I think people don't understand that, you know, the Cardinals obviously have been around for a really long time, but when you look at the ages of success, they can be broken into a small different couple of categories, right? I mean, you look at the time that Walt Jocketty was with the Cardinals, I think what it was 95 to 08, around that time.
Right.
I don't
yeah.
know if that's the exact amount of years, but during that time, 7 division championships, 2 National League championships, and a world title. You look at different ages for the Cardinals, right? You had the 60s when they went to 3 World Series and they mm-hmm. won 2 of them. You look at the 40s when they won 3 World Series. You look at the 20s when they won a couple, right? Like, you can break it up into a couple of different ages when the team was at its best in this long 130-year history. And this, no doubt, that 10-year, 12, whatever it was, year stretch that he was here will go down as one of the best stretches in that long history of the St. Louis Cardinals. So, obviously, very sad hearing the passing of Walt Jocketty. Also had a couple of 100-win seasons in there. Was named the Executive of the Year in the MLB twice during
yes.
his time with the Cardinals. Brought in, obviously, they drafted so many big names while he was there.
But well, he hired Tony La Russa.
He hired Tony La Russa.
I'll always admire him for that.
A trading master as well. I mean, Walt Jocketty, one of the best to ever do it.
Yes, he was. And he is going to be missed. Hey, we've only got a few minutes here, so I want to make sure that we make time for the audio cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Hey, on the audio cut of the day today, we all know that right now Paramount, the Paramount Network, is undergoing a possibility of selling and merging with other media conglomerates. And because of that, they requires FTC approval by the Trump administration. So once this news came out about some issues at 60 Minutes, this is what Scott Pelley had to say about one of the executives quitting 60 Minutes.
Our parent company, Paramount, is trying to complete a merger. The Trump administration must approve it. Paramount began to supervise our content in new ways. None of our stories has been blocked, but Bill felt he lost the independence that honest journalism requires.
Now, listen, did you hear what he said? Number one, there's two things that I want to follow up on, Sue, and you caught the second one because you laughed about honest journalism. Is there anything about 60 Minutes that's fair and balanced?
No, as evidenced by them coming and talking to Kim Gardner. If you isolate
yes.
that story alone, there is your answer.
What about Kamala Harris and her interview?
Oh, my gosh, you're right. Editing
exactly
stuff out.
The way it was edited, they edited out all the word salad.
Mm-hmm.
And if Donald Trump had done a word salad, that would have been the lead of the story.
Of course.
So, number one, it was a joke for Scott Pelley to say it's fair and balanced journalism. But secondly, in that clip, even Scott Pelley acknowledges that at no point did
yep.
Paramount interfere with any
yep.
news story whatsoever.
And he just glosses by it. Nope, they've
right.
never stopped a story, but...
But, and you know, that was a big but, and yet there was acknowledgement that never there was interference. If I could talk to Scott Pelley, I would ask him this. I would say, did any member of the 60 Minutes team or any member of the mainstream media complain when the Biden administration did put pressure on media to bury the Hunter Biden story,
right?
To bury the fact that COVID came from China? Was there any pressure at any time for the media to do that? Did they complain? And, of course, the answer
nope.
to that would be no. Hey, Brad Young sitting in today for Mark Reardon. Glad you were with us. Stick around for more on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.